Hey everybody, welcome to Athlete on Fire. This is another one brought to you guys by Spartan Media Fest and ATP Science. Those guys are awesome for hooking it up, giving us the space to interview here where all kinds of amazing things are happening. I have the amazing Amelia Boone on the show today. She's great. She was one of the first athletes to give me a chance to interview her when I first started Athlete on Fire, so that was always kind of cool. And so many of these interviews do not happen in person, so it was pretty cool to sit down and do an in-person thing. It was actually her birthday. I guess I should apologize to her. We went pretty deep in some heavy stuff, but she's willing to go there, and we had some great conversations about what it means to be injured and coming out of that, and grief, and just a lot of things. One of the questions I asked her is how she would mentor my 10-year-old nieces if she had a chance to talk to them as a female in this culture, in this day and age. So I thought that was interesting. Didn't go too deep into training, just more of a conversation. Lightened it up at the end. Hope you guys enjoy. This is Amelia Boone. You can follow her at ARBOONE on the Instagram for sure. So enjoy the show. Boom, it's recording.
Perfect.
I'm not going to do any intros. We'll just talk, man.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Is it really your birthday today?
It is really my birthday
today. Is it really?
Yeah.
What?
Every year, the Spartan Race World Championships always, I would say, ruins my birthday because it's always like the day after or like the day of. But now I'm like, oh, I'm not racing it. So whatever.
So how old are you?
How old am I?
Yeah.
I'm 36.
Okay.
I feel
you gotta say it. You just gotta say it.
No, it's funny because like I didn't have an issue with 35, and now I'm like, oh wait, now I'm on the back side of my 30s.
Okay. There you go. That's who I was talking to before.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. I'll hit you back tomorrow with that.
Yeah, it's funny. My wife is 4.5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So I'm 41. She's 36 and change. But I keep messing with her. She's in her late 30s now.
I know. I'm like, ooh, that's not good. I'll reserve late 30s to maybe like 38.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it would be easy to talk about the last 4 years since we talked, but that would be
right. So
tiring.
I'm just like, what has happened in those last 4 years? A lot.
I just want to have like just laid back. Like what are you sick of talking about right now?
What am I sick of talking about?
Like when you sit down, somebody asks you a question, you're like, oh man, I have to go into that whole thing again, but you'll do it.
No, I mean, I think that mainly like, you know, people are like, so how, you know, the whole, how'd you get into the sport and things like that. Clearly I'm like, that's been played out for a really long time.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, cause it's, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Talk about everything.
So that's something fun.
Yeah.
So I'm a coach. I've been a coach my whole career.
Yeah.
And I have this awesome client. She's in Boston.
Uh-huh.
Her name is Catherine Seafarth. And she saw that I was interviewing you today, and she was fangirling like crazy. she's like, you're interviewing Amelia? She's one of my top two favorite female athletes. She's like her and Des Linden, but I think Amelia gets it by an edge.
Wow, that's actually super flattering.
Isn't that
Des
cool?
Is Des, yeah.
The beast. So she's a teacher,
okay.
And I'll tell you her athletic background. She just qualified for Boston, so she's a beast.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
She came to me wanting to qualify for Boston in early September and run her first 100K in mid October.
Okay.
So pretty ambitious.
Pretty quick time run, yeah.
So she nailed the first one. She's a teacher, and what she does, she told me yesterday that she does, I guess you do a gratitude journal every morning. So,
absolutely.
So she let me know that you've been posting that like every morning. So she takes that to her students, and then she does it with her kids.
That's
every
so
day.
Cool.
So
have
you done
practice.
It today yet?
I did. I do it every day morning. My first thing was like another year around the sun, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But yeah.
Do you feel like certain things are redundant? I mean, other than obvious, I'm glad to be here type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I after a while I do repeat myself because, you know, but it's more like I focus in the moment. I'm like, okay, what happened yesterday or what is it today that I'm like super, that is great, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a good practice, I think, for me just to like center myself every morning.
Yeah.
For sure.
Who, you know, you see all the athletes, the social media is almost overwhelming at points for people, you know what I mean? And but there's always somebody behind it, like friends, family, like who today, like we know your parents had something to do with who you are, right?
Yeah.
But who today is really supportive of you and helping you be, you know, kind of who you are every day?
Gosh, that's a great question. There are so many. I think I have to say, first of all, I have to give a shout out to my coach, David Roche, just because he's been with me since, you know, through this entire saga and has been hands down, like, the most supportive of me in terms of just not as a, not only as an athlete, but as, like, a human being. And I think that that's really important. And I, you know, when I first started, clearly the thing that I've been talking about a lot lately has been, like, going through eating disorder treatment and whatnot. And, like, I told him a few years ago about it. And I think that as a coach, you know, he's been so supportive of, you know, continuing to support me as an athlete, but then also recognizing, like, as a human, that there are certain things that I need to do to be healthy, to be able to be an athlete. And that's, so that's been awesome. And he's changed my perspective on racing and on running. And I think that that's awesome.
And well, like, in what way?
I mean, when I was really heavily into Spartan racing and, you know, winning world championships, and I think it was, like, kind of all culminated in, like, 2015, and I was a mess because I was so worried about not winning, and I spent every single race, like, if I was here running this world championships, I wouldn't want to see people, I wouldn't want to be around people, I would just be solely focused because I was like, I have to win. Yeah. And it wasn't even like, I need to do well, it was more like, or like, I want to win because that would be awesome. It would be like, I want to win because if I don't win, like, everyone's going to think that I'm not good. Like, I was so worried about what other people would say, and I was so worried about, like, about what would happen. And I almost walked away from it all. I almost walked away from Spartan. I almost walked away from everything because I was just so singularly focused, and I was miserable, even though I was winning. I was miserable. And when I started working with David, I started to realize that, like, that the racing, and this is a quote that was I pulled from him, and then some people attributed to me, so I'm sorry about that, but that, like, the racing is kind of like the celebration of all of the work that you've done to get there. Yeah. And regardless what happens on the race course, like, you should celebrate that with joy, because things are going to go totally wrong, and they do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the beauty of it, you know? And I think that that's been a really kind of pivotal thing for me to kind of recalibrate my relationship with racing and to keep that fire, because now, you know, a few years after that, 4 years removed, like, I love racing. I love to get out there and be out there because, like, I'm not scared of what happens out there anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it seems kind of crazy to put, like, 100% of your expectations and your energy and your joy or sadness, whatever, on 1% of all of your effort.
Yeah.
And that's the switch that needs to be made for a lot of people. Right. I see it in clients all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just letting that result define you. And yeah, a bad race stinks, sure. You walk away and you're like, but the funny thing is that I remember the first time I had a really bad race, and I woke up the next morning and I was like, world's still spinning, still putting my pants on the same way. Like, you know, it's life goes on.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you gave David his quote back. That's nice.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there's David. There's got to be other people.
I mean, my family clearly has always been my support system from a very, very early age. And I think I've really focused lately on going back to, like, the basics of my support system that has been there from since before I even started in athletics. Like, the people who just, like, couldn't care less if I ran a race or not. And I think that that's so important and keeps me grounded. And just really for me too, like, evolving as an athlete and getting into, like, the trail community and, like, seeing, you know, so many different people, like, that I admire that are out there doing phenomenal things. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Big love fest.
So when you come out here to Spartan, I mean, when you hit it and you started winning championships, it was like a perfect storm, right? Like, this was getting popular and you were the face of it in a way. And so a lot of people know who you are when you come out. What's it feel like when people come up to you? Is it weird? Is it cool?
I love it. I think I went through a period of time where I was I almost was kind of, there was a part of me that was like, oh, I just want to be by myself and blah, blah, blah. But, like, I think it's super flattering, and I understand how lucky and fortunate I am because, like, I did. I hit the sport at the right time. You know, I'm thankful to be kind of like a pioneer of it. But I won't lie. There's a part of me now that kind of at this point when I'm not, you know, in the competitive circuit anymore, I'm almost like, I still like feeling like a fraud, but feeling kind of like a, I don't, like, shouldn't you be like paying attention to like all the athletes who are out there crushing it and stuff like that right now, you know? So I do kind of struggle with the whole like feeling old and washed up, or like kind of looking back on it, reminiscing about my glory days.
It's weird though, like in every little social interaction, there can be a hierarchy if the people aren't self-aware, you know?
Right.
Like if somebody came up and just wanted to talk to you, and I'm sitting right here, and maybe they're ignoring me or something, and you like felt that, you know, you can feel that, you know?
Yeah.
And that happens a lot, like just for athletes and people who are in the public eye in general.
Right.
But it can be, it can still be healthy. Like people, I think people like you as a person at this point, you know, like they know enough about you by now.
Right.
You've only been on like 4,000 podcasts. Like, I mean, it's not like they don't know. I mean, even for the podcast stuff that I do, by the time somebody finally has a conversation with me, they're like, I feel like I already know you, you know?
Like, well, I mean, you share bits and pieces of yourself, you know? And so people understand. People are always like, it's weird to, I feel weird coming up to you because I feel like I know you and you don't know me. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, come and introduce yourself, you know? And I'm sometimes, you know, I feel bad because like if people catch me at the wrong moment, I'm just kind of like scattered or something. And I'm like, no, I'm super friendly. I don't bite.
Athletically, well, how's your body feeling right now?
I feel fantastic right now, knock on wood. But it's been a rough few years for sure, especially to come from a place where I was racing strong and feeling great and to like never have any injuries, and then just injury, bam, bam, bam. So I think like physically, the getting over the physical part is the easy part, is what I've realized, you know, that like bones heal, things like you get better, but the mental freakouts of like now focusing on every single little thing that may be kind of bugging me, and is that going to be the next catastrophic thing, that's much harder to overcome, and
it's
something
real
that I didn't give full respect to, I think.
Yeah. So what are some things that you do in your training that are helping you with that?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm really, in terms of mileage, I've kept it very kind of like lower mileage and more consistent. You know, I'm not making big leaps in mileage, I'm not doing massive volume. I just have to rebuild some more trust, I think, in my body. Because unfortunately, I've been conditioned to believe that I will, you know, I can run for a bit and then I'm going to break again. And I have evidence to support that. And so that's kind of hard to disconfirm. But I think that, you know, like keeping that in that kind of safety zone, and then adding in other types of cross training that I kind of, that pique my interest. So I've gotten into a lot of swimming. I've like looking at open water swimming. I've been doing a bit of that lately. I was hoping to get out at Donner Lake today, but apparently there's a wind advisory and they're not letting like people out there. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where's that at?
Donner is just up the road.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, I know like Tahoe, they're saying like boats aren't allowed out because of like wind and stuff like that. Yeah. But, so I don't know, just like kind of keeping it fresh in that regard. And just taking it slow, as much as patience sucks, as much as like, there's the part of me, I would love to go out and run the Ultra Beast tomorrow, you know, or just love to get out there and go play in the mountains. But I'm like, it's not where I'm at right now, you know? So.
Are there any athletes right now that you relate to? Men and women, as you watch these, you know, it's because it's crazy. The field is just so much bigger now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I admire the heck out of so many of them, for sure, you know, and especially about how competitive it's gotten now. But so I think that like I talk to Ryan Woods a lot because I tell him that I gotta view him as my role model because he's like 40 years old and crushing it, and so I'm like, you know what, you give me hope that I'm 36 right now. Everyone's like counting me out. I'm like, maybe I'm not done yet, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I think that it's become such a diverse field. It's so cool, and I love that.
Yeah, I always, me and my wife, we've been putting on races forever. We actually just sold off our last race series, so we're, knock on wood, not having to do that again.
Yeah.
The hardest work in the world. I mean, if you've been to enough Spartans and races, like, these people who put these on are freaking amazing. The logistics,
absolutely.
You can lose sleep over this stuff easily.
I can't imagine being a like a race director and handling all
that. It's rough. I mean, not only does do all the logistics and everything have to go smoothly, then you always have in the back of your mind, like, somebody can get legitimately hurt, you know?
Right.
It's just like, oh. Anyway, anytime we'd have, like, really, so we had this half marathon in Colorado, and it gains about 2,800 feet. It's a legit half marathon.
Yeah.
And we would always have a couple guys and a lady in their 70s every year. So I would always do the math. Okay, you're telling me I can do this for like 40 more years? Okay, I'm good. I'm good to go.
That's a huge thing for me, and I'm like, I want to be a lifelong athlete, and so I need to treat my body now to build myself up. So, you know, when I'm 78 years old, I can be out there doing this. You know, maybe not the Spartan stuff, but you know, like
Silver Spartan.
Yeah,
it's coming.
There we go. As we age, I think it's phenomenal. I'm Marla Sweeney, who I love dearly, and she's she ran the Beast last year, and I don't know her exact age, and I don't want to butcher it, but I think she's in her 70s, and I mean, she just goes out there and crushes it, and
it's freaking awesome.
So inspiring.
That's so cool. Okay, I have a couple nieces. They are 10 years old.
Yeah.
And you know, you wrote this really powerful article about eating disorders, which it's gotta be hard. Like, first of all, when you write, like, it connects directly to your heart, because you're not, like, verbalizing, you can hold back, all that stuff, and when you write, it's like there. So I'm sure it was at times hard to write and figure out, but I thought it would be interesting just to go a different way about it. If my 10-year-old nieces were here, how would you spend 2 or 3 days with them to mentor them a little bit? Like, what would be some of the things you talk about? And speaking to a 10-year-old, not to, like, our peers. Like, how do you speak to younger people about this stuff?
Specifically about eating disorders?
I think eating, maybe body. You're not going to say body image to a 10-year-old. You know what I mean?
Funny thing is that it gets younger and younger nowadays, unfortunately. You see it. Because this didn't cross into my world until I was like 16 or so, but I think younger and younger now.
Maybe what are some of the patterns that you notice in yourself that...
Yeah.
And what would you have done different on your own, assuming that everybody in your life had your best interests in mind, you know?
I think, to be honest, I would have, looking back as myself as when I was younger, I mean, I think I was so fearful of so many things, and I was so afraid of doing anything wrong. And everything that I did, it's like, I was afraid of failing at something, because I was like, what happens if failure happens? And I was very fortunate in that I did not have a lot of quote-unquote failures as I was growing up. You know, I was a straight-A student. I was doing everything, and I went to college, and I graduated top of my class, and I got into the best law firm after law school and things like that. Just my entire life has always been like, can't fail, can't fail, can't fail. And I, at a younger age, I would have given myself permission to explore that, you know? And I think that had I experienced more disappointments and failure and things like that when I was younger, it probably actually would have set me up better later on in life.
That's good.
And I think that, you know, and especially for young women now, it's so easy to get caught up in the comparison game and the aesthetics and stuff, especially around like body image and whatnot. But it's just not, it's easy for me to say now looking back on it, but it's like not worth it, because knowing the amount of damage that I did to my body, you know, as I'm growing and things like that, and I can't get that back now, you know, like, and so I think it's so important, especially, and I don't have kids, so I can't totally speak to this, but just focusing on the function of what your body can do for you in terms of like, look, I can carry this massive sandbag up a mountain, and that is incredibly rad versus what it looks like, because
that's huge.
You know, it's so easy to say it doesn't matter what it looks like, but
it's true.
It's much harder, I think, to internalize.
No, I don't know how many, and probably, to be honest, like probably 90%, most of my clients are women, 80% of my clients are women, but I think probably 90% of the people who have come to become what I consider a good athlete based on where they started, and then after going through all that process, still want to look a certain way, like just trying to burn that out of their heads. Like, what you can do is way more important than what you look like, and it's huge.
And I think that the thing that I tell people that was you know, if people are like, oh, were you like in this sort of part because you thought like you would perform better in sport? And I'm like, no, like I absolutely knew that my history with an eating disorder was actually impeding my ability to perform in sport.
Yeah.
Because like I wasn't feeding myself properly, and that was the reason why I went back into treatment. It was because I was like, I was like, this is hindering me as an athlete.
Yeah.
And it's not connected to it at all. It's actually the opposite. It's like, to be able to be the type of athlete I want to be, like I can't have issues with food. And you know, I talk about this a lot with my coach too, and he was like, you can look around the dinner table and figure out which athletes are going to last, like in terms of like longevity, based on like how they, like if they're just eating enough food.
Yeah.
And especially I think for younger people to understand that like there's not like good or bad foods, like it's just every, you know, to stop assigning moral values to things. And it's so hard because our culture, like at a young age, just in like tells us everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up, and you probably did too, in the era when it was like low-fat, fat-free everything, you know? And that was what you were supposed to do. And I still remember being bombarded with that.
No, it's crazy. Like, I feel like I've had a decent relationship with food. Yeah. Like, I'll go on, like, sweets binges and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
But even in this day and age, because of the industry I'm in,
yeah,
and the information that's coming from 800 different angles, like, I'll grab something to eat, and, like, my gut will drop for a second. I'm like, man. Like, this means that I've been marketed to feel a certain way about this.
Absolutely.
In some way, shape, or form. I don't know where it's coming from, but I shouldn't feel this way about this.
No, we somewhere along the way, the diet and culture industry has, we have assigned morality to food. Which, if you kind of step back and think about it, it's like, this is good, this is bad. You are a better person if you eat this versus this. And I mean, I just, if you, and you're like, who assigned those values and where did those come from? People selling us products, that's where it came from.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, the flip side is we can get whatever we want at any time.
That's true.
That, I mean, that is a problem. Like, overeating is more of a problem in our country than undereating for the most part. And, but it's just such a bad, it's the same thing. It's a relationship.
Exactly. You know, and it just, it manifests in different ways with people, for sure.
This is kind of personal, but I have a client that I worked with, a young lady.
Uh-huh.
Her name is Latia Wilson, and I coached her from 15 years old till she went to college. She ran track at CSU, Colorado State. And went to track meets. Like most of my young athletes, they go to college, you let their coaches do their thing, and they'll come back for advice in summers and stuff. So she graduated last year. She's the only African-American to get a degree in IT at CSU that year, which is amazing. Working as a software engineer, first year out of school, and she passed away last week. And I literally was a shell of myself yesterday because the service was yesterday. I stayed up late writing a eulogy for her from my point of view. And then I made my poor, amazing wife. I didn't make her, but she had to read it at the service yesterday. And the reason I'm saying all this is like grief is a real thing. And I don't know the specifics behind her death and everything, and it doesn't really matter. But have you dealt with any major grief in your life? And if so, like how does it, from a functionality standpoint? I've lost my dad in the last couple of years. Like there's a real process there, you know?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. You know, I am very fortunate in that I have not, in terms of death, have, you know, been kind of insulated from that. I have grandparents that died when I was very, very young, but like too young for me to like process that. But more and more what I'm realizing is like grief, I mean, grief is, it doesn't have to be a death of somebody. I mean, you experience grief anytime you have a loss. And not to compare somebody's death to, you know, loss of a sport or loss of a relationship or things like that. But one of my things about grief and that of what I'm realizing is that we, and what I find is fascinating, we as a culture, especially in the U.S., like grief is something that we hide behind walls.
Right.
That it's like, it's something that like you're not supposed to show, that, you know, like you stay strong. We value being strong through it and like putting on a happy face. There are other cultures in which grieving is a very communal process.
Yeah.
And you bring the grief out in the open and everyone grieves together, and they have these these like grief circles, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because it helps you actually move past it and process it. And I mean, even for me, when I have always written about injury or about loss or like things in my life where I was kind of grieving the loss of sport, grieving the loss of, like, I found that the best way to actually work through it is to bring it out into the community and share it with other people.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I don't know if that's been your experience.
Yeah, it has been, actually. I think the podcast, just being able to podcast, and you know there's like, and I know this for a fact, there's somebody in Oklahoma right now who's going to listen to this, and they don't have people that are doing similar things as them to reach out to, and knowing that this is a, like, certain things are normal, you know, when you realize that you wanted to get some treatment, like, that's an option. Some people might not know what the options are. From a grief standpoint, it's just, I've met a lot of people this year who've lost spouses, like young, like 30s and 40 years old, and just trying to put myself in their spot. And like, the one thing that a lot of people don't realize is, and this is for athletes too, like, when you get hurt, there's fanfare, if you will. There's a lot of attention to you initially, but your rehab and how you eventually come out of it, it doesn't take a week. It takes freaking years, man. And I think the grieving process, like, I wasn't able to go to the service, but my intention is to reach out every 10 days, you know, and just know that it can be really lonely for people when the big event ends and they have to go back to regular life.
Absolutely.
It's tough.
And I think that's like something that people don't, and I'm guilty of it too. It's like, you know, then like there's that initial outpouring and then you're like, but it's still, the grief doesn't go away just because of that. And also another thing is like, not putting a timeline on the grief process. Like, I lost a relationship in my life, and I was very much thinking, like, Amelia, you should be, as the days and weeks and months went on, I was like, you should be over this by now. Like, you should be over this. Yeah. Like, you should be over this. And it's like, sometimes you can't force the process.
Yeah.
You can't force the process. And I think that's important to recognize. And I also think you had on something, too, with, like, the whole... when you're talking about like how like the event happens and there's an outpouring and then like, but you're still going through it. And somebody warned me when I came out about my eating disorder, I would get this rush of everyone being like, you're amazing and this is phenomenal and thank you and you're doing so much. And like, you ride this kind of endorphin high and then you're like, yay. And then that kind of quiets down and you're like, wait, but I still have a problem, you know. It's not like that, like, didn't fix it, you know. And so just like recognizing that,
it's tough, man. Like, in this day and age, you can get a lot of you can get a lot of energy and attention for being honest and just figuring out like what does it look like after it runs out.
Exactly.
And then I think about, because I work with a lot of young kids too. It's like, when they are getting that stimulus and it runs out, like, teaching these kids how to have good coping skills with big life issues is, it's tricky, man. It's a different world for sure.
Than what we had to deal with. Imagine. I mean, and in the era of social media and how we get a shot of endorphins every time, like, you know, you put something out there and people respond to it, and then you're like, okay, well, now I have to get my next hit. And things like that. I can't imagine growing up in that.
No, it's tough. All right, so. Seems like we went deep enough. So let's
let's go to the lighter. Go.
Okay, it's about lunchtime. I gotta get my happy. So some workout stuff. I love giving like actionable things for people. So people are like, okay, she's killing the freaking Spartan. Come off some injuries. Now you're getting back at it. Like, what are some like specific workouts or challenges that that you really like right now that you could let people know to go give a shot or try?
Well, I don't know if I would say I really like it, but I will say in terms of like a challenge, because it's not my thing. Like, I will avoid strength training because I don't enjoy it. I would rather go out and run like 20 miles a day and whatever, do my thing, and then like never sit in the gym and whatnot. But I think for me, like, my big thing and what I've noticed in terms of durability in my body is like, if I force myself twice a week, just the basic squats, deadlifts, things like that in the gym, making sure clearly that your form like is good, But and incorporating those and then noticing how much, like, how that translates in terms of just durability and whatnot. So I would say anyone who's out there avoiding strength training, it's definitely a key aspect. Yeah,
my clients and most of the people that listen to Becoming Ultra are going to be really annoyed right now because talk about that, like, literally every single day. And people will do anything to get – so I put on a trail camp up in the Rockies a couple weeks ago. And this lady who I'd been talking to about some of her training, her and her husband came out.
Yeah.
And I had another expert in the field speaking on injury prevention and strength training. And she knew – she's trying to get a – it's like mommy, daddy. And she's like, all right, you're not going to let me do this? I'm going to ask him. She's trying to get him to tell her that she didn't have to strength train. And she was going about it the worst. She's like, so for cross training, swimming's enough, right? And he's like, yeah, swimming's a great way to cross train. I was like, time out. Yeah. She thinks that strength or cross training is strength training.
Oh,
can we clear this up?
Right. No.
And then he's like, okay, you know, so people do anything to get out of it.
Yeah.
Especially when you've done endurance stuff your whole life, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, that's your thing.
No, and it's like, and you're like, and the strength training is hard, and it's annoying, and I'm not getting my heart rate up because I'm just like sitting in the gym, you know, like, and that, and like for an endurance athlete, it feels wrong, you know.
Are you going heavy when you're going?
Yeah. So I lift twice a week, and it's pretty, it's shorter reps, but like heavier.
Yeah.
Heavier loads. And I think that's a lot of where the research has come in terms of like being beneficial.
Yeah, for sure.
And another thing that I absolutely love and I think more runners should do is jump rope.
Yes. It's all vertical displacement. That's all running is. It's
great. Well, I mean, in terms of like strengthening your lower leg complex,
yep.
And just your, like, your feet, your Achilles, your calves, I think it's so important and such a good thing. And I had a background in CrossFit, so, and I also was a jump rope champion when I was in.
I was about to ask you if you, my dad was the regional coach for the jump rope for heart in South Florida.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. Yeah.
Double unders, backflips, all shit.
So when I was in, it was in fourth grade, I mean all through the time, like I was always at like the top of the jump rope for heart, like whatever thing. But I also did competitions in terms of I would do like double dutch, and then I would take like a pogo stick inside a double dutch thing, and then I would take a rope, and I mean, we did,
you did all that
kinds, all that gnarly stuff, and it was great. So
it's funny, like, I've been jump roping since I was like 5.
Yeah.
And to teach an adult who's never jump roped, it's painful, but you just got to do
it. It's a rhythm thing. But even if you don't have a rope, you can set the bouncing motion is the same. I mean, in terms of strengthening the feet,
Well, you know how I teach them. I'll get a handle on the jump rope. I'll cut the rope in half.
Oh.
And I'll have them swing it next to them without jumping over it.
Yeah, to get the
so they can get used
timing.
So they don't have to get so irritated with their feet hitting the thing every once in a while. But then you go to, like, double unders, and then you're starting over. But it's I mean, running is primarily vertical displacement.
Yeah.
Thousands of times, and if you can get that, and for people coming from like sea level and who want to race like at Squalor in Colorado, and you don't have, like, I have a lot of people in Florida that we work with, and just getting in the sand first of all, and then getting some stairs, and then just jump roping, man.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Jump roping for 2 or 3 minutes is, I think 3 minutes of jump roping is the equivalent to a running mile work wise.
Really?
Which is pretty wild from a metabolic standpoint.
That's crazy.
So it makes sense.
Yeah.
So don't do this. This is one thing I did one time.
Okay.
When I was like 23, I was like, I got a jump rope. I don't feel like running. I'm gonna try to do 1,500 jumps. I got to 200 and stopped. It's just ridiculous. Don't do that.
You're like, no.
No. So what else are you excited about in life right now? And
what am I excited about? Man, well, I keep having these, like, grandiose plans for, like, 2020, you know? And these are the races that I'm going to do, and these are blah, 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 blah. I really want to get into swim run.
That's really cool.
The Otello series and whatnot.
Where's that at?
So they have a series. There's one in the U.S. now. So the one that I'm going to do is in end of February, Catalina Island.
Nice.
So you swim, hop out, you run a bunch, you hop back in the water, swim again. But like the World Championships is in Norway, Sweden, one of them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think it's a different kind of challenge.
It looks fun because really it's wild. Mm-hmm. You take triathlon,
yeah,
and you get rid of all of the crap, all of the yeah. equipment and crap, right?
Yeah,
and then you just go out in these places. Just go on these beautiful places. Like, I know they have a couple in North Carolina and Virginia. Yeah. I have some friends that have done them.
Yeah,
and it just looks like a blast. Like,
yeah, so it's just something a little bit different, you know, because I spent the past, you know, year or so riding the injury train, swimming a lot. And I'm like, well, I might as well use these swimming skills for something. And, like, triathlon hasn't really appealed to me, but, yeah.
The time commitment for a triathlon is a little different.
Yeah, I'm getting there in terms of, like, maybe thinking about hopping into it. But I also, it's more the gear and the fact that you can buy speed on a bike. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, it just doesn't sit well with me. But I understand that's the game, you yeah. know?
Well, that's why I think the swim run is so interesting, because it's still mostly human power, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So when you guys, for these races, are they run a certain route and then swim A to B, or is it like an out and back type thing?
No, so it's generally it's like swim A to D, because they do it kind of like around all the islands, and so you'll run for a bit, and then it's like swim point to point, and then you'll run for, and then you'll get back in the water. So it's not like a loop.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, each one's set up a little bit differently. But yeah, you're pretty much traversing like a long part of an island, swimming through inlets and stuff like that.
So logistically, are you bringing a dry bag for shoes and just hauling it?
No,
or are you wearing
shoes?
Your shoes? Do you really?
Yeah.
That's different,
but they actually, most people end up actually, they like strap a pool buoy to their legs, and then you just swim with your arms. And people, you'll see people, they use paddles too. So you basically, it's all paddles and with a pool buoy.
And that's such a, yeah, because I've done triathlons.
Yeah.
Like, the hardest thing to get used to is like, all of the blood is in your upper body.
Yeah.
And then you get out and like you have this huge crazy rush. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes for everything to stabilize.
Yeah.
But doing that over and over, it feels good, but it's
right.
different.
Yeah, I mean, because then I've been doing some open water swimming, and so I remember the first time that I swam in the ocean, and I like got, I was like, I'm seasick right
now.
It's
brutal.
And it was a pretty rough day, but I was like, I'm pretty legitimately seasick at this point. I can't imagine getting out and then like running right now, but yeah.
So Pacific or Atlantic?
Pacific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice and cool.
Yeah. Well, I was down in LA, so it was actually pretty warm. It was like 70 or so.
That's a whole different beast, man.
Yeah.
Open water and ocean.
Oh,
choppy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I swallowed so much salt water. I was like, oh, I swim with my mouth open. I should probably do that. It's like new to me. I didn't realize that I was doing that.
Why
yeah.
am I sick right now?
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. And then you have the old, there's too many freaking movies about critters.
Oh.
It just ruins people.
I know. I'm like, well, that's why, I mean, I live in San Jose in the Bay Area. People are like, oh, go down and swim in Santa Cruz. And I was like, that's great white territory. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Like,
that's cool. Are you running this weekend?
I'm doing trail race.
Oh, tomorrow?
So, yeah.
I went and ran the course yesterday.
Oh, fun.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Straight up and then some meandering.
Right.
Last 2 miles were pretty clean.
Yeah. Cool.
So you'll have fun. Who else sponsoring you right now?
So I run for Ultra, and then I'm still working with Beat Elite, have been my longest running sponsors, and then let's see, I also work with Rock Tape and Ultimate Direction and Sufferfest Beer. So.
Sufferfest. Are those guys out of California?
They are. So they are. They were just bought by Sierra Nevada.
Okay.
So yeah, so they...
All right, so do you know your teammates for Ultra?
I do, yeah.
I have some crazy Ultra stories. Anyway, me and my wife, we worked with them. They sponsored some of our events the first year they were open.
Yeah.
So like Golden and Jeremy Howlett, some of those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not going to throw them under the bus, but just hilarious stuff. Like nothing bad, just funny, like startup stuff. Right,
right, I'm sure.
So I'm going to sit down with Amanda Basham
and
Ian. I know Ian really well. But do you have any... you got any dirt or any questions I should ask?
I don't have any. I'll be honest. I actually just met Amanda for the first time last night. So, I mean, I've followed her on social media and whatnot. But, like, so, no, I sadly do not know them well enough to get you any dirt.
Do you have any questions for them?
I would be curious if they would ever contemplate doing a Spartan race.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
And what would be
I know Ian would, because we talked about it last night.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that.
Yeah, hey, I'm trying to convince all of my trail friends to just try it.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, and people talk about how there's no money in trail racing, and no, I'm like, there's plenty of money in Spartan. There's a lot of money in Spartan, but people are like, but I don't know the upper body obstacles and things. I'm like, it's a learn. You're gonna fail first of all, but like, it's a learning curve. You'll get there. Just stick with it. You know, most trail runners would have the foot speed to outrun, you know, a fair amount of people.
I mean, I was like, I won't pay for events. I've been event directing, so you know, it's like, I just don't want to be in that world. Right. I can go out by myself. But if you want to go do something that you can't build a Spartan race in your backyard.
No,
so it's a really cool experience for people.
Yeah.
Amelia, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah.
Catherine, if you are still fangirling, she's actually here in the flesh. I promise.